Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on this Halloween, the 31st of October. I'm just warning you, I don't think most people in this room really like the holiday, but we're going to celebrate it anyway. We were just talking about this. But thank you, a little Ray Parker Jr. To start off for that was from the original soundtrack. That wasn't from the remake, was it?
It was from the original.
An instrumental version. Well, it's lovely. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. And let us, we're going to get started and talk about what's been happening. As you know, it's been a busy news week, and we have a lot to talk about, so we'll get right to it. Libby Post, who was missing yesterday in action because she was sick, is still sick, but decided to come in and share it with us all, and we thank her very much for that.
Well, I'm going to the doctor later.
Oh, well.
This is on the way.
Yeah. Great. Give us your doctor's name so we can see them in 3 days when we catch what you have.
But I have to tell you, whatever this is going around. I've known a couple of people already who were diagnosed with pneumonia or walking pneumonia. And this goes back to what Mike and I were talking about before. The old wives' tale, which I firmly believe, when you go outside, when it's supposed to be cold out, but it's nice out, and you go outside without a sweater, this is what happens. People get sick.
I think so.
I do think so, because your body is not thinking that it should be warding off anything, and there's all that stuff. I mean, it's really, I remember my mother saying, always put a coat on.
All right. Well, you have your sweater on today, and you look lovely,
thank you, Mom.
And I thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So, excellent. Mike Spain is with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union, and it is a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
We should note that J.P. Miller was supposed to be with us today. He is from the Empire Report, and he was on his way over, and he threw out his back. Mm. And now he can't walk, so he's not coming in.
I think I know something about this.
Yeah, you know,
great deal of sympathy here.
The thing is, he already had the brace on, so one must think that he does this a lot.
Well,
because he already had the brace.
He's a tall guy.
Yeah,
the perils
that's what
of being
he said.
Tall,
he's
right.
a tall guy. Said. Yeah,
me
so.
Too. I'm a tall guy.
Oh yeah.
How do you get a back?
You're a giant. A giant.
In many, many ways, indeed. Speaking of giant, we're speaking, of course, of Dr. Alan Chartok, who is the giant at the end of the table, and we welcome you, sir. How are you this morning?
Yo, Joe, go.
Yo ho ho. Good morning, and good morning to all of you. We thank you for joining us and spending a part of your day with us. Let's start going over the stories at hand. And of course, we're not going to get too far from where we were yesterday. There has been, you know, we did the entire show yesterday talking about the indictments against Gates and Manafort, and it wasn't until about 4 minutes before we went off the air that the Papadopoulos indictment and that news was released. So we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. We'll also talk about the reaction from the President of the United States and where we go from here. So just to bring you all up to date of what we know as of right now, according to Washington Post, they have changed the that page is not found. We seem to have lost the page. One moment, please.
Took away their internet license.
Somebody paid the Washington Post.
No, I'm paid. I just they
no,
took away
them.
Oh, page. Yes.
You see it?
Yeah, I see you. The charges in the Mueller probe touch all levels of the Trump campaign. The president. Aides say allegations have nothing to do with the president. The special counsel investigation has taken a heavy toll on the Trump administration, reportedly putting the president on the defensive as reports have emerged about the work the special counsel's team is doing. As details of the first charges against three former campaign aides came out, White House lawyer Ty Cobb said the one thing that's clear is that there's no reference to collusion, no reference to the president. We'll get to that in a second because that
timing is everything.
Does not seem to really be what's at stake here. Meanwhile, Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, and a man by the name of what's the first name of Papadopoulos?
George
Papadopoulos. were all charged. Now, the thing that seems to be putting some great concern within the White House. It seems as though the White House was ready for Gates to some extent. They were certainly ready for the Manafort indictment. It's clear they were not ready for the Papadopoulos plea agreement. And the possibility that Papadopoulos was wearing a wire for a good period of time, also they were not ready for. They have, the Trump administration has repeatedly said that they didn't know this guy. He was a volunteer. I believe Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the briefing yesterday, used the word volunteer at least 14 times in describing his role. Although many pictures have surfaced of top level meetings within the campaign of him sitting at the table at an interview with the Washington Post and talking about at a time when people were questioning his seriousness as a candidate and questioning his knowledge of foreign policy, he was using Papadopoulos's name as someone who would be a top name in his cabinet to help him through these issues. Obviously, now there is some distancing. And the question the other thing about that narrative is that the emails that have been released show that the offers that Papadopoulos made were sometimes looked at warily, but other times looked at quite warmly as to how they could help the campaign at various times during the summer and fall in the connection with the Russians and setting up meetings at Trump Tower, which we also know did occur. So that's my setup. Where do you want to start?
Nicely
Alan?
Done. Well, nicely done, Joe.
Thank you. I'm sure I left something out, but
it's not that you left anything out, but the stuff is coming fast and furious. Cable news this morning is reporting that Trump has called his daughter and his son-in-law into the White House and said, "Go back to New York. Your time here is done," which is very interesting and it may be connected to all of this.
So he's distancing himself from his daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kirk.
We have no idea whether or not he's protecting them, or whether he's distancing himself. But if in fact Papadopoulos was wearing a wire, we don't know who he was speaking to. You know, with that, if he was, and it has been widely reported or speculated that he may have been as he cooperated with the FBI. And if you read the indictment, it leads one to believe that he really is cooperating quite seriously with the special counsel. There's so much stuff coming out here. In the meantime, Rush Limbaugh and all the sycophants and the rest of them are out there doing their best to right the sinking ship. But it's really quite terrible now. As has been pointed out a number of times by legal analysts, if you want information and you're the FBI or you are the Justice Department or the special counsel, do you, because let's say they've got, it's clear that they're going after Manafort on income tax evasion. But if you live in a house, you may remember that you and your spouse sign quite often, not always, but quite often jointly file. And if the spouse signs, then and it's not correct, or if it's criminal, she can be indicted too. In the case of Flynn Jr. Offers a little bit of heft to all of this because you know no father really wants to see a son indicted. Now then, that brings us into pardons, obviously. So do we think that Donald Trump is above pardoning everybody else? Everybody? No. That's why, as we've said here from the beginning, the fact that Schneiderman and Cy Vance and the others are investigating too. He can't pardon in New York State. So we have a potpourri here. And one of the things that is so great about this story is the fact that the justice people who were doing this kept shut. Nobody had any idea that, for example, Papadopoulos was coming down on this. So clearly, Mueller is a man who knows what he's doing and knows how to do it, and we will expect a lot more. And they said, by the way, the Papadopoulos indictment was just a very small part of what they were up to.
Well, that seems to be the story that we're hearing, that this is the tip of the iceberg. One thing that you were talking about, Alan, which I thought was interesting, Paul Manafort's lawyer, when he was at the when he was being indicted yesterday and pled not guilty, the lawyer came out and said, as Donald Trump has been saying, there is no quid. It was the first line he said.
Yeah.
And then the president tweeted about a half hour ago and said the fake news is working overtime. As Paul Manafort's lawyer said, there was no collusion. Well, don't you think? Am I overly cynical to believe that the president called up Paul Manafort's lawyer and say, make sure the first thing you say is there was no collusion?
No. But what is clear, I once knew somebody who I thought was a little shady. I liked the guy, but he was shady in a sense of organized crime, if you know what I mean. And I was sitting there talking to one of his loved ones, and I said something about Maria or something, and she said, mafia, mafia, there's no mafia. So... Point is,
right.
So the point is,
the person protests too much.
It's a little bit the protest, as you say, Libby, too much.
And he also tweeted at 8:21 this morning, just about an hour ago. I hope people will start to focus on our massive tax cuts for business jobs and the middle class, in addition to Democrat corruption. Okay, so
one more thing, Joe Bannon now. Is tweeting like crazy that this is war, that the Republicans in the Senate and the House have to protect the president, and they have to go out and really take on Mueller. It has to be an anti-Mueller war.
I think you're going to start seeing that more openly. I think everyone has been polite and quiet about it, and everyone, Republican leaders, have said nice things about Bob Mueller, who used to be the FBI director, a man really regarded as one of high integrity, and he has run a very tight ship, as you pointed out. What's remarkable is he was appointed in May. Here it is, not even November yet, and he has come out with indictments. That's fast.
Well, what's really amazing is this tip of the iceberg, right?
Yes.
This is an administration that's not even a year old. Icebergs take millennial.
10 months,
to
10
build,
days, something like that.
Right? Yeah. And so you can only imagine how long this malfeasance has been going and building and building and building, if this is just the tip of the iceberg.
But
I mean, Watergate was the second term. You know, it's...
Well, the Watergate break-in, right. It was 1972 when it happened. June of 1972, and he didn't leave until August of 1974.
Right.
But things unfold a lot more quickly right now because of social media, et cetera, et cetera.
And that is part of the defense that the Trump administration is using right now, that these charges have nothing to do with the campaign. They date back well before he came on as the campaign manager, and also that it is outside the scope of Mueller's investigation.
That's not true, by the way, right?
Well, it seems to me that if you hire a guy to run your campaign who everyone generally knows was in bed with the Russians, then maybe there's a problem, but I don't know.
Well, that's poor
judgment. I mean, he said he would hire the best of everybody, but he hires somebody who already was tainted.
And Manafort said he wasn't representing anybody while he was running the campaign, and that's not true.
Well, and then Sarah Huckabee Sanders says he was brought in to work with the delegates before the convention and then let go right after that. He also was made campaign chairman for a period of time.
And was the man behind the convention, right?
Yes.
I mean, was
he ran a tight convention,
orchestrated the convention.
A couple of things here. One, to counter that argument that it had nothing to do with the scope of his investigation, no, when he was appointed, he was given specific authority to go wherever he wanted to go. So, and I'm sure he insisted on that.
We're talking Mueller.
Mueller.
Wide open.
Yeah, right. So,
charge.
So that's number one. Number two, yes, these 10 counts, they look awfully specific about the avoidance of taxes and the money laundering and the other things. Well, that could put you in jail for most of your life. And so if you don't want to go to jail for most of your life, you flip.
Here's the deal. This man, Trump, has been loyal to no one. We see he went after Jeff Sessions. He's gone after everybody. How and this kid, and he is a kid, George Papadopoulos. I mean, he looks like he's 12. Mm-hmm. You know, he flipped. How loyal do we think Manafort and Flynn and everyone else who's going to get indicted is going to be when Trump will go after them immediately?
I'd like to answer that.
Okay.
They think they're going to get pardoned, and they think it's going to work. That's why they haven't been cooperating up until now. They think they're off the hook because he'll pardon them.
Which is an admission of guilt.
Well, he pardon Joe Arpaio, sheriff in Arizona.
But also,
he was convicted.
Also, yeah. if you're talking about many of the players here being your family members,
it's probably going to be difficult.
I think that he has the legal authority to do it.
And he who?
The president, mm-hmm. to pardon people. And Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon before he was charged with anything.
Yes.
So you can pardon somebody preemptively and get them off the hook for something they may or may not have done and may or may not have been charged
with.
But,
of course, Gerald Ford was not related to Richard Nixon.
Right.
But he did lose the next election. But he did lose the next election as a result.
But he was president of the United States, and he did have that authority.
Yes, you're right.
We are going to take a break. We'll pause there. We will come back and continue our conversation. Mike Spain, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok here. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and happy Halloween to all of you. Yeah,
Be out there tonight, Joe?
No. You know what? The great thing about living out in the middle of nowhere is nobody comes to our house.
Me neither.
Yeah, well, that's nice, isn't it? Well, now you live right.
It's interesting because no. We live in a place where they bus people in from all of the Berkshires, from the southern Berkshires, and our one block becomes a fair. We always run out of candy. Yeah, we've given out like 1,000 pieces of candy. It's amazing.
It's quite the night. But when my parents were alive, we used to go because they lived in the village. We used to go, and I used to do it for them. And it was fun to see the kids, to see them dressed up. And the great thing about it is, and then when you've had enough, you just turn off the light and say, "I'm done." Right.
In the old days, that could be dangerous. You could get your house egged.
Well, where we live, every year we would buy candy because there were kids on the lane. No one would come ever. So we just stopped. We were like, you know what? No one's coming, and now the kids are teenagers.
How come? Why? Why?
I don't know why nobody came. I think they all went to Schuyler Ridge they did trick-or-treating at the academy.
They went where the candy bars were bigger.
Yes, I think that's probably...
on the Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Yeah.
Remember when I was a kid, there were some houses you'd go to and they'd give you like whole nickel candy bars.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we've done that, but now we're downsizing. Well,
there was one family
sugar
I remember.
Is a problem.
The Levinson family in Belfry, Pennsylvania. We would go to that development, and there was a woman there that you would go in, you get a candy bar, and then she would do like this. Let's make a deal. You could then
trade
in the candy bar, and there were like $5 bills uh-huh. in this thing, and you could go in and fish for the $5 bills. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Although
I think it's sadistic.
I can't stand this holiday. I mean, I just.
You know what? My only problem. I actually love it for the kids. I think it's great. The kids have a blast.
Yes, but
it's when grown-ups get dressed up at work.
It's like, give me a break.
That's when I start to lose it.
My best time.
No offense, Dina.
Right.
Always dressed up.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dina. Okay, my best trick or treating was when I was 8, and I just had an eye operation, so I had a patch. Anyway, so I went to the pirate.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, I remember that, but that's it. Right. My parents went with me.
In the meantime, somebody got caught. One of the newspapers I read in the middle of the night said that somebody had a meth put into their collection.
Well, people, I remember that.
This just gives the opportunity for wackos to be wacky.
The
razor blades
and that stuff. People are...
I wanted to read we have some letters. I just wanted to read, this is an analysis from the CNN correspondent, Stephen Collinson, who writes that as the events of a dramatic day unfolded, there was a sense that the White House was being forced to engage on Mueller's home turf rather than in the wild and whirling political environment where Donald Trump feels most at home. Mueller's first indictments of former Trump campaign aides, the unveiling of a surprise guilty plea by a former campaign foreign policy advisor, and the manner in which he set out his case suggests his probe is sweeping, strategic, and steeped in detail, and it's clear that he's just getting started.
My question is, what happens if Trump fires Mueller?
Well, yesterday, you may remember on this very program, which you may not have been listening to, Libby. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, she was ill.
I was ill.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And I would have made you iller because I predicted that's exactly what was going to happen. You have to put yourself in his place. And when you are trapped like a rat in the corner, I'm not saying he is, but when you're trapped like a rat in the corner, you have to understand you're going to bite because otherwise you're done. I think he has to fire Mueller in his own head. And despite the fact that they're saying he won't and it's coming out of the White House, you can't believe a word these people say.
And what would the Republicans do? What will the Republicans do?
Well, that's right. Now, remember that you have anywhere between 75% and 80% of the Republican Party still, to this day, sticking with the
Republicans who voted for Trump.
That's right.
They're sticking to him. But the independents, it's 35%.
No, but Mike, it's not only the ones who voted for him.
Right.
It's people, are you a Democrat or a Republican? So 75% to 80% of the people who identify themselves as Republican, not only that they voted for him, and I think there's a big distinction, those are the people who you worry about voting in a primary and voting you out of office.
Right. What'll be interesting is to hear what the leadership of the both the House of Representatives and the Senate start to say, the Republican leaders. They have been saying that Mueller is a professional and they've praised him and they wanted to sit back and let it happen. When they start to talk about the probe being biased and having a lot of Democratic operatives in the probe, et cetera, that's the time to get worried because they're setting it up to let Trump do it. And that, I think, is going to be, I think there's going to be just mayhem if he does that.
I do too.
Yeah, there'll be this will change
things.
Well,
there will be, and it may well lead to something
political mayhem.
Yeah, maybe impeachment or maybe something
else.
Well,
but help me out with that because yesterday when you brought up that idea of Mueller being fired, Malcolm Nance, who was on our program, said, "Well, that's an express train to impeachment," but. By who? I mean, are there enough Republicans who would turn to join the Democrats in doing anything like that?
If you listen to Jeff Flake, you'll hear that other Republicans are saying the same thing.
Saying it, but not doing anything.
Yeah,
not doing anything about it. I mean, what is the threshold for them to get guts and realize? Or what is the threshold, if you want to be cynical about it, where they feel politically safe coming out against a president who's facing indictment and his family's facing indictment. He's granting pardons and firing special prosecutors or special counsels.
So what was it that turned the trick
it was the tapes.
On Nixon?
It was the tapes.
It was the tapes.
And we have some wire, don't we?
Well, we may.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think George Papadopoulos was going to get FaceTime with the president. I think that's quite clear.
It wasn't like he was sitting down with Jeff Sessions.
Not, but when the sun sets on Trump himself, and there's no doubt about it, that's when you'll get people running for the exits.
Well, you know, with Nixon, he also had faced a Democrat-controlled Congress.
That's correct.
You know, yeah.
And you had people like Howard Baker.
Well, that's
you
right.
You had people
Libby.
With depth and a conscience. So
well, whatever they had, they knew it was time to jump.
Well, you had people who actually believed in democracy. So
let's go to some letters.
Oh, thank you, Joe. And this is from Michael, Mike from Akard. Two things. One, I don't think you can overemphasize the intensity, loyalty, and focus that Mueller's team and the FBI have right now. To keep Papadopoulos a secret for this long must have taken a massive coordination. All right, I think these people knew what they were doing. Okay, two, as a first-generation Ukrainian, I plead for you to make the distinction for the NPR listening audience that Manafort was working for / being paid by pro-Russian operatives in Ukraine. Thanks for the great work, and that's from Mike in Accord.
Accord.
Accord, where everybody drives a foreign car and right. plays a musical instrument.
A-C-C-O-R-D,
yeah,
right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Probably built in Ohio.
Yeah. And Jason says, sinking ship. Good morning, all. The Trump ship is sinking. He knows it. Evidence is this wag the dog story. I'm going to change it because it says weigh the dog story, but I'm sure that was done by spell check.
Wag the dog,
which is why Joe keeps telling you to read your stuff before you send it out. The wag the dog story about the Benghazi brother being captured. Give me a break. Impeachment status imminent. Jason from Thurmond, way up there in the North Country. Okay, here we go. And then Roger says, Tony Podesta resignation. Does the roundtable think that Podesta's resignation from his eponymous?
Named for him.
Oh, from his eponymous lobbying. Oh, yeah, I see. I get it. Thank you for that, Roger. A lobbying firm indicates that Mueller is going after Russian interference, influence peddling, and bribery on both sides of the aisle. If so, could that reach back to the so-called Uranium One deal? Or would Mueller's position as FBI head at the time preclude his involvement? And that's from Roger.
That Uranium One deal is baloney.
It is.
It is nothing.
And it's been investigated thousands of times.
As Hillary Clinton let a Russian company take 20% of the U.S. uranium out, none of it left the country. And during her tenure as Secretary of State, a Russian-connected company invested in American firms, and that is it. That's not the best thing, but it's not anything like what it's being portrayed on the cable stations.
Let's not confuse people with the facts.
I know.
And there are those people, some Republican operatives, and Bannon being right up front on this, have called for a special prosecutor to prosecute the uranium deal.
Hey, you know, she lost the election. What happens with Hillary Clinton is incidental. With all due respect, that has nothing to do with the future of our country. It's just some matter that's over on the side, and it's just a distraction to bring that up.
Although, you can only imagine, if Hillary Clinton was the president of the United States and any of this kind of stuff got out there.
Well, you know,
you can imagine,
that's all speculation.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got a there were a couple of letters yesterday, and I think we talked about it on the air, but that Fox News and some other outlets on the right were talking about that during the Hillary Clinton administration, basically talking about her time as Secretary of State, and yet saying the Clinton administration, to which Hillary Clinton finally tweeted yesterday and said, just a reminder, I'm not the president. I don't have an administration. I lost.
Yeah.
So
I mean, why they're bringing up a candidate who came in second a year ago? It's a smoke screen. It's a distraction. It's trying to rally the troops. Blah blah blah.
Okay. So my question to all of you is: you said before that the Republicans and you know, maybe changing their minds. I think you implied that. I don't think that's the case. I do think that the independents in this country are, and we know that that the president's numbers are down to the point where they say they're described as the lowest ever. Although it's hard to know because poll to poll is tough. We just saw one which said 38%. Now I know he's been lower in some polls than 38%,
but
they say that's the lowest he's ever been in this particular poll.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that the guy is, for want of a better word, and I apologize to all of you who get sensitive about this, crazy. Let's assume that he's nuts and that he believes his own stuff to the point where if you put my famous lie detector cuff on his arm, it would be a straight line indicating he was telling the truth. So when they say he's sitting in front of that television all day and he is furious and that he is, crazy about all of this stuff, That really indicates what the problem is, because he's not going to say, oh boy, I got caught. I did something bad. I got caught. He's going to say, these people are bad people and they are after me.
Yeah, he'll be a wounded animal who used the power, all the powers that he has, to do whatever he needs to do to try and survive in that office. I don't think he's going to go quietly, and if there is a psychiatric breakdown of some kind, it's going to be very messy, and you got to remember, this guy has the nuclear codes.
Yeah, well, it's true, but I don't know about psychiatric breakdown. I don't think you're going to find this guy flailing around on the floor. I think what's going to happen is that the problem psychiatrically here, and not being a psychiatrist, of course, or a professional, is that he believes his own stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. He's not going to stop that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We will include more letters. We'll get Libby a lozenge. Did you get a lozenge? You got a lozenge?
Yeah,
okay, good.
Sorry, folks.
And I know Sarah will bring in some more letters.
Yeah. More. I know you're suffering. I feel bad.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We'll be back. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we will return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and Libby Post on the spot this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to other topics of concern.
Thank you, Joe. Jerry. Jerry says, panel, it occurred to me that when you read Trump's tweets verbatim and include the crooked descriptor when attached to Hillary Clinton, you are unwittingly doing Trump's dirty work for him. I think you should change your policy, if there is one, and drop this adjective. Thanks. And that's Jerry and Rhinebeck. I don't know that we ever.
Well, when do you change a quote? I don't think you're. What is your editorial policy at the Times Union? Do you try to take out the word you find offensive in the quotes?
No, but we'll leave it blank and let people. We rarely do that.
But
we
not going to take out crooked. If the president tweets the word crooked, you're going to say crooked.
No, that's not an obscenity. We will clean something of obscenity.
I think he's saying that you're doing his dirty work by saying it is when you repeat it.
Right, and therefore covering what the president of the United States actually says is something wrong. I mean, hello. That's kind of the job of the media, isn't it?
Heather says, Bannon. What are the panel's thoughts as to whether Bannon will be charged with anything? And that's thanks from Heather.
How about with being a big loudmouth? Is that a crime? I don't think so.
A blowhard,
right?
Well, it is interesting, though.
He's protected by the First Amendment.
Yes, that's right. But it's also interesting that he got kicked out. And if you take a look at the history of who got kicked out, it's because the White House knew that there was something very dangerous about Manafort. My bet is the reason Manafort got kicked out is because they saw at least some of what we are seeing today in terms of specifics, violations of law.
Yeah, it had come right after he was after the convention. He was axed by the Trump campaign because he. It was revealed that he received all this money from the Russian-backed party in Ukraine.
So now we know that.
Yeah.
So now the question about Bannon, I agree with you. You can't, for anything he says, and newspapers have a way and the television has a way of dealing with him. I was watching CNN, I guess, very early this morning. They had a picture of Bannon on. They could not have gotten a more ugly shot of the guy, you know, with his facial hair sticking out and all the rest of that stuff. Don't tell me they don't editorialize by photography.
I know an old politician used to say the newspaper takes a lot of pictures of you so they can pick out the worst one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Well, sure. I mean, and in the case of Trump, that's easy.
Yeah.
Because he always has that sort of oh on his mouth. Anyway, forget it. Pardons. Happy Halloween, panel. The stewing, in quotes, Trump is going to pardon everyone, including possibly himself, and fire Mueller. How the ensuing constitutional crisis is resolved will determine whether the U.S. will remain a democracy with separation of powers, What do you all think the GOP will do in that event? And we've been talking about that all morning. So
I refer you
to the last question.
Well, yeah, and there's one other point to that.
House of Commons, and
it's not my thought, but somebody, one of the wonks on TV said it the other day, is when will the Republicans who control Congress realize they'd be better off with Pence? They could get their agenda through and it wouldn't be as controversial. And when that opportunity comes, they may just go that direction.
Ah, but will the Democrats realize it? I mean, in other words, what do the Democrats want? Are they better off with Trump? Or are they better off with, you know, Pence?
I don't know how the Democrats could not support impeachment if Republicans were going along. That would be difficult for them not to do.
Well, it is clear that when you have these guys on from the various investigative committees, these congressmen and people, they almost always say too early for impeachment. They want it all right.
10 months,
they don't
ten,
want it
10
now.
Months, 10 days into the, into the
Maureen says, panel, is it the real danger that the Russians have, quote, invaded our political space and Trump will not acknowledge this? There's real treasonous behavior here in my mind. And that's from Maureen.
No.
I thought somebody might want to say something about that, but no.
I think we...
Nobody does. Okay.
We agree with the premise, correct?
Charity.
Yes, Mary.
Charity says, Trump's reactions to current news. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm seriously worried about Trump and his capacity to do something dangerous when he travels to Asia at the end of this week. Would you be willing to address this issue in light of the recent indictments, et cetera?
Well, as I was walking in with Libby, she said, Trump's going to Asia this week. Maybe he'll just stay there.
Well, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility
we
to
do
get
know that
some
when,
asylum somewhere.
Yeah, we do know that when people are in trouble, presidents are in trouble, they always travel.
Yeah.
Traveling.
Well, this was planned. I mean, this
you know,
was
it was, yeah.
Yeah, but it makes
well,
them
but
look
of course,
presidential.
When did they plan it?
But, you know, well... I heard this. I was listening to a CNN discussion last night about this. I think it was on CNN about this very argument about traveling and trying to get away and wag the dog and all that stuff. But this administration has, I mean, if you have a crisis every 3 days, eventually it's going to catch up to when you're traveling.
Oh, no, but no, somebody will ask the question while they're traveling. You know, they used to, as I said yesterday, I think, you know, when a president was traveling in the old days, you know, you left domestic politics where it was. But I think that's all gone now.
I know this is a big issue for Teresa will be with us tomorrow, but I know this is a big issue for her as to what the world stage will think and what will the repercussions be. So we'll talk about that.
And if he's going to South Korea too, the issue of the nuclear potential of North Korea will certainly be on the front burner, and that's not a small story, and that
very,
will
very
get
scary.
A lot of attention.
Yeah. And John says something I agree with. Trump will pardon anyone and everyone if it will save him. He obviously doesn't care about appearances. That's exactly right. I believe he will pardon everybody, and I believe that's what they're holding out for. That's why the prosecutor has not turned them yet.
Do you have a when? I mean, if you think he's going to pardon him, when do you think that's going to happen?
Because, actually, I mean, Joe, about three... No, I have no idea.
No, I'm just mean like...
3 p.m.
It would seem to me that if you were going to do it, you would do it before any indictments came out. Whereas, so here you have some damage. Do you... If he were to do it, would he do it soon? Or would he do it... Or would he wait to see if... because obviously... Much of this caught the White House off guard. So
the Papadopoulos part did.
Yes. Yeah. And let's say if there is some sense that his son-in-law Jared Kushner were to be brought into it, point would the firing come?
If it depends on your expectation of his or your understanding of his rationality. I mean, if he's a rational person, it might be one thing. If, in fact, he's impetuous, which he is, he'll wait until that moment when he's just infuriated, can't get out of the corner, and then does this thing. My bet is right now they just stay with the plan for a while until he has to do it.
The Washington Post description of him staying in the residential quarters of the White House till noon, seething and just throwing things at the television set and bellowing for people to come to him.
Seething is the right word. That's the word they're all
using. Is really amusing.
It is.
I think,
wish,
but
I wish we could all be flies on the
you
wall.
You will all remember that.
Well, somebody evidently was, and they spoke to the Washington Post.
Yes.
He clicked on the television, spent the morning playing fuming media critic, legal analyst, and crisis communication strategist, according to several people.
You all remember when Dick Nixon got down on the floor and made Henry Kissinger get down with him and pray? Things were pretty far gone then, don't you think? John says, Trump will pardon anyone. And we did that one, right? John from Williamstown. Thank you. Right.
We're saying again.
And then, one more, and then we have to go over to news.
All right. I'll pick Will. Brucey says, speculation that Mueller's, I heard legal speculation that Mueller's specific moves yesterday made it harder for one Trump to pardon Manafort. His indictment was not non-political. And two, made it harder for GOP Congress to go along with pardoning or firing Mueller for the same reason. Well, you see, that's the thing. Congress doesn't have to go along with it. They don't have to.
All they have to do is do nothing.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Libby Post is here. Mike Spain, Alan Chartok. We'll be back right after this. Sounds like Danny Elfman. What is the music? Is it Danny Elfman? Yeah. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Libby Post, we have Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok here. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to the letters in a second. Want to get to some other issues. We'll go through a bit of a lightning round here to get next 20 minutes, probably four topics in. First of all, Donald Trump is expected to nominate a new Fed chair. We hear the name Jerome Powell as the next Fed chair of the Federal Reserve. President Trump is expected to nominate Mr. Powell, according to people familiar with the president's decision. The White House intends to announce the Fed chair selection on Thursday. If confirmed by the Senate, Powell would begin serving as chair in February, replacing Janet Yellen, a Democrat who Trump has at times praised, but many Republicans wanted replaced. Her term ends February of 2018.
I mean, it's no surprise. She's an appointee of the Obama administration. She's done what many regard as an excellent job keeping the economy moving through a very tough time. And Powell is widely praised, and Wall Street probably will be fine with it, and it'll probably be seamless. That way he gets to get rid of a Democratic woman and put in one of his own guys. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, you know, this probably will be fairly smooth.
Mikey said.
Yeah, from what I hear, it's the safest pick they could have made, not expected to really make any dramatic changes, and is a fairly stable guy.
Yeah, what's funny is, though, Trump has been tweeting like, oh, everyone's watching me to see what I'm going to do with the Fed. They're going to find out next week. He was on TV with Lou Dobbs and asked Lou Dobbs, who do you think I ought to appoint? I mean, he's making a big deal out of this because it's a nice distraction.
He's a narcissist.
He's a reality show host.
Yeah.
Okay. There's that. Bo Bergdahl. We haven't really talked about this much on the program, and I would like to just spend a moment or two on it. It's a fascinating. The case in and of itself is fascinating, but then you have the fact that he's going to be sentenced. He was going to be sentenced last week, and now because the president commented, the sentence may be lighter as a result of the president commenting on it. And this, I think, goes back to what we've been talking about this morning as to what are the ramifications of the president's actions. So his harsh criticism of Bo Bergdahl, who walked off his army post in Afghanistan in 2009 and was captured by the Taliban, will weigh in favor of a lighter sentence for the sergeant, according to a military judge. I will consider the president's comments as mitigation evidence as I arrive at an appropriate sentence, according to the judge. The judge is expected to sentence Bergdahl in the next few weeks. The judge rejected a request that he dismiss the case or cap the length of the sentence on the grounds that the president's comments have precluded a fair hearing. The judge said he had not been influenced by the remarks and that the public's confidence in the military justice system had not been undermined. He faces up to life imprisonment. He pleaded guilty on October 16th to desertion and endangering the troops who were sent to search for him.
Well, you know, I can always feel sympathy for somebody like Bergdahl. But on the other hand, I think that there's a very good point here that people have been injured and hurt and maimed as a result of his irresponsibility. So I certainly don't think he should go free.
No, and he is admitting to that, and he's acknowledging the one soldier that was wounded and is basically disabled for the rest of his life and had part of his brain removed because he was shot while he was out looking for Bergdorf in Afghanistan.
Bergdahl.
One's
on Fifth Avenue.
Yes.
Near
right. Trump Bergdahl. Bergdahl.
It used to be on Fifth Avenue.
Yes, right.
It's not there anymore.
And yes. But the president, during the campaign, said that Bergdahl should be basically executed. And I mean, you can't. I mean, he tried and convicted him before he faced the justice system. And that's the dilemma that this judge has before him.
Well, this just goes to show that, I mean, you know, Donald Trump does not know what it means to be president. He has no clue about the decorum or what he can and can't say, what his words impact any decision, any kind of judicial thing or any issue at all.
I both agree and disagree with you, Libby. On the agreement side is, of course, everything you've just said, I believe, is correct. But the disagreement is, I think he does know what it's like to have the power of a president and to abuse it.
Yeah, well, he knows how to abuse power.
He doesn't care.
Right.
Let's get to the other story, which was making the news over the weekend and also was forwarded yesterday, which is about Kevin Spacey. Evading questions about his sexuality for years, insisting that it was a private matter, even as Hollywood gossip surrounded him. On Sunday, the celebrated actor confirmed what had long been whispered, "I choose now to live as a gay man," he wrote. But some of those who might have supported him were instead incensed by the implication that his sexuality was relevant to an accusation reported by BuzzFeed News that he had made a sexual advance toward a 14-year-old boy 31 years ago. They saw his coming out story as an intentional distraction from the accusation and a damaging conflation of homosexuality and pedophilia. The accusation was made by a successful Broadway actor by the name of Anthony Rapp. There were several tweets in this, my favorite being from Billy Eichner, who said, "Kevin Spacey has just invented something that has never existed before, a bad time to come out."
Yeah, before we get into it, because it isn't that he made an approach to him. The accusation is he threw him down and jumped on him.
Well, he brought him into... Spacey was 28... 27, 28.
26, I think.
26. Yeah. And Anthony Rapp was 14. And he was at a party. And, right.
But okay. What happened is it's not an advance. It's not, would you like
no,
to?
No, he...
Look, rape is rape.
Well, he did, but that's not. But that did not happen, according
that did
to
not
Rapp.
Happen. And the son
that
was
did
able,
not happen.
Or
he
the,
got
the
away.
Trial was able to get away.
He got away. Anthony Rapp says he got away. But that
okay,
he was
rape?
Groped yeah. and Spacey got on top of him. You know, for me, the issue is, like Billy Eichner says and everybody else in the gay community, leadership of the gay community is saying that, you know, one is not an excuse for the other. And he's like saying, okay, well, I'm gay now, so I'm cured of that predatory behavior. Well, that's not true. And Andy Hum, who's a well-respected journalist in the gay community in Gay City News, has a piece this morning about how it's been one of those unspoken things, just like Harvey Weinstein, that Kevin Spacey has been putting the moves on men in his sets, you know, in movies for a very, very long time, and that nobody was willing to come forward because they didn't want to ruin their careers, just like the women who are afraid to come forward or were afraid to come forward until one did with Harvey Weinstein. So, you know, it's a shame because Kevin Spacey, I love him as an actor. You know, this is what we were talking about before. I love him as an actor. I think he's great. But he has a great deal of self-hate. for being a gay man. He's in his 50s. This is not the way an adult comes out.
So yesterday Netflix announced that House of Cards will end its run.
Supposedly they made that decision.
They had said it has kind of run its course. But they announced it. There was some hope that they could try to bring it around depending on the ratings of the new series, and now they just decided that it was done. Interestingly, and I read this in two places, and I don't know if it's completely true, but the understanding is that. One aspect of it is true, which is that Anthony Rapp told this story as early as 2001. There's also been claims that he told the story using the name of Kevin Spacey, and the print outlet decided not to print the name, concerned about legal action. So the fact that the story...
Well, I mean, that's not an incidental concern.
No. But it's interesting that it had been out there for so long, and he had told the story, and yet nothing had been done in the intervening 16 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the part to me, and I think you were getting to this, Libby, was that somehow Kevin Spacey is suggesting that his homosexuality was the reason that he attacked a 14-year-old when he was an adult. That was completely wrong. It was, as Alan, I think, described it, attempted rape. That's wrong, whether it's with a heterosexual attack or it's on someone of your own sex. And somehow that is related to him being gay. And the two are not the same thing. And yet this kind of event for people who are not enlightened will just fuel that thought.
It buys into the gay as predator.
Yes, right.
Trope.
It does,
which
and it's just
everyone
it,
was. You know, everyone of our age group was raised with. The kids now, not so much, but you know, gay equals predator, and gay man always wants younger gay man or younger boy. You know, the whole NAMBLA thing. I mean,
this is the narrative that is incorrect,
but
it's being promulgated by this.
It's the stereotype that now you will see Sunday on the Christian shows, them talking about this and saying, see, we were always right. We were always right. Gay men are predators, and gay men do go after young men, and they want to convert them.
But straight men don't go after young, pretty women.
Right. Because that's their right, though, you know, because God and the Bible said you can do that.
So Dan Savage, who is a prominent columnist and very funny man, but said nope to Kevin Spacey's statement. Right. Nope. There's no amount of drunk or closeted that excuses or explains away assaulting a 14-year-old child.
Amen. It's true. It's true.
All right. Let's go to some letters.
Okay, Joe, thank you. John says, a law professor once told us, if the facts are on your side, pound the facts. If the law is on your side, pound the law. If nothing's on your side, pound the table. So get set for a lot of table pounding from Crump et al. And that's from John of Saratoga.
Yes, but he also has pardon authority.
Right.
Yeah. And Doug says, Pence and Manafort. Pence and Manafort are close friends, and in fact, Manafort recommended Pence for the job. Trump preferred Christie. Pence and Manafort communicated right up until the inauguration. I think Pence is also going down.
That would be lovely. But then we get Paul Ryan.
No, then you get the 25th Amendment. In other words, then you get, if in the old days there was a succession plan. If they both went at the same time, if they were in a room and the room blew up, you'd get that. But in this case, what would happen is the president would... If the vice president went first, the president, as in the case of Gerald Ford,
would appoint.
Actually, the vice president, now president, would appoint Nelson Rockefeller.
Right.
So that succession issue, I just wanted to...
Yeah, but if they all both go at once...
Yeah, no, you're right about
that. Then Paul Ryan.
If they both go...
But most likely, if Trump somehow leaves office, Pence will become president. And that's... I don't think there's any scenario that I know of that's going to take out Pence... legally before or at the same time Trump goes.
Well, you would have to indict them both and prosecute them both and all like that. Okay, don't forget North Korea. Trump used an unnecessary, ineffective, and dangerous missile strike in Syria to distract from domestic scandals. His approval rating shot up. Could he do the same with North Korea very dangerous? Do we have our facts right here, by the way? Does anybody?
I mean, it will draw attention away from the problems at home. You said it, Alan, that it's a common practice for presidents when there's
problems domestically
mm-hmm. to go foreign, you know, and to talk about international issues.
Checks and balances. Hi, panel.
Hello.
Hi.
It seems like we have a crisis that the founding fathers didn't foresee. All three branches out of check and balances because of one corrupt party holding all the power. That should mean our democracy is over. However, in capital letters, the bureaucracy created by Congress in the 1930s and 60s had checks and balances built into them that are only things protecting us from chaos. We now have two founder groups? Question mark. Regards, John from the place where they drive foreign cars.
We do still have a Justice Department, and we're having an independent investigation of what's going on, and that we should be glad about until we don't.
I don't know that I agree with this, with the premise of the letter. I think we do have three branches of government, and I think that while we would like them to be a little bit more definitive, I think they're still there, and I think they have been operative to some degree, watching things. I mean, after all, you got very close margins in the Senate, the House is, everybody's up for election. I think there are games within games going on, but I do think that the three branches of government are not where I'd like them to be, but they're there.
So that's it for the letters?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, that's okay. All right. So we have one more story, and that is the judge blocking the Donald Trump's ban on transgender troops in the military. A federal judge on Monday temporarily blocked a White House policy barring military service by transgender troops, ruling that it was based on disapproval of transgender people generally.
Well, that certainly is true.
I mean, it seems to be the case, doesn't it? Certainly is the case
that that's what the judge said.
Right.
The issue, of course, is when it wends its way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, what are they going to say?
Right, this is true, but
it could all be temporary. I mean, it'll just delay things until Trump has a chance to leave office, and then it will probably be moot. Don't you think?
Probably.
Well, it depends who replaces
him. Yeah, right. I mean, if it's Pence, he'll. Yeah, if
it's
Pence, he'll want to ban everybody except, you know, straight men. But this was the right decision to be made. The discrimination faced by the trans community in the military and just in every walk of life is pretty horrific. And when they did this, it once again just gave license to people to go after the trans community in their own communities. And we've seen an uptick in violence against the trans community. So,
you've thought about this stuff a lot.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you think that when the White House does something like this, we know that they play to their base, and we pretty well suspect the base doesn't like mm-hmm. trans in the military. But do you think they poll? I mean, what do you think the American people are thinking about trans in the military?
I think the majority of American people don't really think about this issue at all until they come face to face with it.
Okay.
And if...
Much like gays in the military.
Right, just like gays in the military.
Or gay marriage.
Right, right. Unless it's part of their life in some way.
We only have 15 seconds.
Okay, but I do think that the majority of Americans think if somebody wants to serve, they should be able to serve, and that's it.
We'll end it there. Libby Post, thank you very much. Get better. Go feel better.
Don't come back here.
Mike Spain, thank you very much. Alan, we'll be back after this.